All lines are now bridged.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Information Blocking Task Force. Quick roll call, and then we'll jump right into it. Andy Prescott?
Present.
Michael Adcock? Stephen Lane?
Hello.
Carol Turney?
Present.
Denise Webb? Tasha Terma?
Present.
Erin Marie, Arian Malik, Valerie Gray,
here.
Anil Jain,
here.
John Pansy,
here.
Cynthia Fisher,
present.
Lauren Thompson, and Denny McComb. Okay, I'll hand it over to you, Andy.
And Denise Webb is here.
Thanks, Nate.
Good morning, everybody. It's been so long since we last met. I was waiting for some humor and laughter at that point.
I think we're just exhausted.
Well, those of you that flew across the country and then still joined the first call yesterday, you have my eternal gratitude. I think we're going to have a slight twist on the agenda we see in front of us today. I'd like to focus upon the definitions of EHI, HIE, HIN, and touch upon a health IT provider as well. I've had considerable discussion and feedback from all of you on the call over the last 24, 48 hours. So I think we should go through those as a group and try and come to some degree of consensus on where we land. And I'd like to start with electronic health information. Mark, if you can... just in nice screen so we can go through this together. I would like to suggest that we consider as a task force adding a fourth type of information to the definition we currently have, and I appreciate that we probably want to touch on the third part as well. And that's another type of information which is not individually identifiable, but is still relevant to an individual's care. So specifically, this would be to enable some of the potential directions that public policy around price transparency might take, and would possibly line us up with the broader definition of health information as per HIPAA, but with the obvious electronic media casting of it. And I'd like to open up for a bit of discussion in the group as to whether we feel that that is actually a useful approach or not. And specifically, I'd like to keep it in this separate definition, so it's pretty straightforward for people to understand where it sits and what's what. So who'd like to go first?
Andy, do you have that written down somewhere? So we can see it?
I don't. I was going to add it on the fly. I was going to start with the sentiment and then discuss it with you and get the wording in. But I can quite cheerfully put some potential drafting down there for us to throw rocks at. That's fine by me.
I think that would be helpful for me.
Okay. Second, I am just opening the new document and I shall start drafting.
Andy, and while you're opening, this is Mark. Hey, everyone. Just wanted to, I have the text pulled up on the screen right now. And just a note for the people that weren't in work group one, just to emphasize, really, so our definition is essentially one and two here, with the exception of adding as defined in HIPAA is a proposal by this group, and also adding the parenthetical S after future payment. So that's the ONC definition, I believe, unless Andy snuck anything else in there. And three is the real proposed addition from this group so far. And then Andy's proposing an addition of four. So just wanted to make that clear.
It's not Andy's proposal. It's a group proposal, but yes.
The group. Exactly.
Andy, this is John. I remember us talking about this before. Can you hit me over the head with the object of the game? In adding this fourth, what problem are we solving?
Where there is, I think we all agree that there is some policy machinations going on right now around how price transparency could be enabled across the US healthcare ecosystem. This is to put the tracks in place so that information sharing is not a blocker to enabling that to happen. So we're not saying this should be shared. We're just saying that the definition of EHI includes this information, which should be able to be shared if there is a mandate to share it. Because right now there isn't, but that's not our call.
So sorry if this comment's too soon or out of sequence, but my concern is that I understand what you just said, but I'm trying to think through the ramifications of including a new class of information in EHI when EHI is used to implement that definition is important in stating and implementing the regulations throughout.
I agree. If I had it my way, we would have a separate information class entirely that's not EHI, that's probably EAHI or something like that. But we don't have that luxury to do that, I don't believe. Mark, correct me if I'm wrong.
I can't say what you can and can't recommend, but yeah, generally speaking, Cures says that ONC or Cures says that information blocking would be defined as an interference with the access, exchange, or use of electronic health information. So within that scope, we look at EHI under this regulation for information blocking purposes.
Hi, this is Cynthia. I sent in the longer document to the entire group today to look at, and I know I've tried to be clear and articulate this, but if you look at Cures Act on electronic health information and you go to the original finding of health information in the law, it points back to HIPAA in 1996. And HIPAA has several classes under health information, including this broader definition, which the preamble is very clear that, you know, all of this just is in relation to the care and the health and the decision-making of the health of that patient. And if we have the broader definition, then of HIPAA, which basically says payments and future payments are part of it, it should be held accountable under information blocking. So to be overtly clear, that patients have the right to see their entire picture as it pertains to their health and their health decisions. And this has been in law since 96, and the whole goal here is if we just provide this broader bit, then we can open the pipe for also pricing to be very clearly part of it as part of accountability and information blocking. And it will allow for a broader way for patients to get access what they are due and deserve.
So I think, Cynthia, that's good background. Mark, you need to refresh your document view because I've updated it as we've been talking. I've also...
Andy, I'm sorry. Andy, it's Val. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Hello, Val.
I don't know if I received a document from Cynthia that she just referenced. That may be helpful because I'm still confused here.
Okay. Cynthia, can you make sure that's left to outbox, please?
Yes, I'll resend it.
Okay. So if I just try and paraphrase, I think Cynthia has articulated that there is a class of information which is not uniquely identifiable to an individual, yet is directly relevant when it comes to the transparency of pricing around the individual, and that information should not be blocked.
But Andy, could some, this is Val again, I'm sorry I'm being dumb,
sure.
But I guess I don't understand what this fourth category would be introducing that's not already in the prior categories.
Okay.
If it's already in HIPAA, right? Because we already referenced HIPAA.
Well, no,
and then we say even broader than HIPAA.
Okay, stop. Hang on a second. Okay, so the class one is electronic protected health information as defined in HIPAA. So that's a particular subset of the data that's defined in HIPAA, protected health information. Then we broaden out to electronic. I've just put some wording in here. We can change this, okay, around electronic individual health information, so any other information identifies the individual, etc. And then this other class that Cynthia is referring to is information which is relevant to a patient's care or pricing and payment, but it's not individually identifiable. So it's things like charge masters, etc., where they are relevant because they lay down the schema by which remuneration around that patient care is going to proceed. However, they're not covered by electronic protected health information or any other information that identifies the individual, etc. Cynthia, did I capture that correctly?
Yes. I think the broader definition is the first definition, and then you get to the individual, which is a subset, and then you get to protected. So we sort of have it backwards, but you think of it layers of you know, this is about treating the patient. So they, as it relates to the individual, but it is really the broader definition, then the individual, and then protected. So it's three tiers, and it's all defined within HIPAA consistently that way as health information and electronic health information definition as well. So it's really enabling the future of care to work in both at the physician and patient interchange of what are the right choices, what will be the best quality at the appropriate, most affordable price to that patient. I mean, this is the future. I mean, we wouldn't buy a car without seeing the price.
Cynthia, yeah. to help the group, beyond charge masters, have you got some specific examples of other information types that we can insert into the preamble potentially to illustrate this out?
Can I jump in?
Oh, sorry, Anil, you got your hand
no,
up.
No, it's Stephen. Thinking that...
Anil has got his hand up. But
oh, Stephen, I'm sorry. My bad.
Anil?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. I just want to say that I think it's – can you guys hear me okay?
We can hear you, yes.
Okay, great. I just want to say that I think it's really important to understand what we mean by identifiable. Charge master data that's not relevant to that patient should not be shared. Charge master data that's relevant to the patient would therefore then be identifiable with that patient and could be shared or should be shared. I'm not understanding what the distinction is here. We're trying to broaden the types of information, but it has to tie back to the care of that patient. Because otherwise, I don't understand how we would not say then other charge master data that's not relevant to that patient shouldn't also be shared. It doesn't make sense to me.
Hang on. Let's just let Cynthia think through that and that response, and let's just let Stephen get in, because I'm sure he's on the same topic. Steve?
Yeah, and again, I think charge master is a little bit of a red herring. I think that what Cynthia is getting at, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that we're really trying to get to the cost data for the individual patient. So as we've heard repeatedly, showing a charge master doesn't help. It's really showing that calculated, you know, contracted cost, you know, based on the patient's payer plan, you know, condition, et cetera, which again doesn't necessarily have to be include the patient identifiable data, because it can have to do with their employer group or with the plan that they selected. It's not necessarily the full charge master. It's derived based on patient characteristics, but it's not patient identifiable per se. It might apply to the patient's spouse or to someone else in a similar plan. But I think it's getting down at a more granular level than the full charge master.
Okay, charge master is a misnomer. Cynthia, do you want to give us some examples?
Yeah, so imagine like in Uber, right? Like where we go and we have choices and we can ride share or we can look at what's available. We could look at a taxi price, or we could look at a rideshare, or we could look at an UberX, right? You get to see the different prices, and you get to choose. Unless patients can actually get access, you know, for a blood test, you know, to be able to say, okay, if I stay here, it's going to, you know, I will be charged $4,300 for an infectious disease blood test to be a healthcare worker. That's outrageous. But if I could see another price, if I could actually see those prices posted with my doctor, I could see it. I'm ambulatory. I could walk 6 blocks in this neighborhood and get it for $200 with a $20 out-of-pocket copay and a negotiated rate. But until we can see the actual prices, we can't make decisions that are affordable. And we're being information blocked by staying within the healthcare system where we are in the chair that we're in to get a facilities fee of $275 to draw that blood versus being able to walk 6 blocks and get it for $20 out of pocket and $200. This is a real case. So the issue with pricing transparency is you have to have access to being able to see relevant data to that physician and patient decision.
Okay.
You know, so a college kid coming out of school trying to get a job, if they can't see the prices, they're so much in the hole before they even have a chance at the world. So we have this opportunity to use health information, broader definition, and information blocking, information under the information blocking domain, because it is information blocking. Let's be real, not to have transparency.
So this gives us the ability to see it. Okay, we don't have the charter use the information blocking regulation to create a public policy around
But this
that
isn't a public policy.
This is the health information
definition to open the pipes so that open APIs can be developed. And innovators, if you guys don't do it as the EHR vendors or the providers or the payers, let the open applications be able to get access to the pipes that are HL7 already pathway approved as a standard and allow the market to work. That's the game-changing moment of time if you open the pipe.
So, Cynthia, we've got to be very clear. We are able to specify the information scope, but if there is no mandate for that information to be shared, we have created the tracks, but we are not able to say that information must be shared. And Neil, you had your hand up. Can you?
Yeah, I did, but I think you may have been already covered. But, I think if we're talking about price transparency, there might be other parts of our comments that you could sort of fold in, Cynthia, your argument into, which I think no one's arguing against price transparency. The question is, within the information blocking and the definitions of EHI, is this the best place to impact that, or is there a broader conversation that needs to happen? And I thought there was an RFI around that, but I could be wrong.
There is an RFI around the border price transparency discussion. We are purely talking about right now.
You allow
patients access to a comparative analytic of their own test results. Say we're allowing things to be in machine-readable format of our health and our trends in health. If we can compare that to general data that might be able to be shared in that moment of time in a comparative graphing through an open API with the physician. So if you allow for that piping to be open, you can do it there, and you can also do it in the future of pricing. So, I go back to saying the broader definition of HIPAA is all health information that relates to that patient, the individual. So it's all health information that relates to their health and their care plan. If you can't get access on the pipe for visibility and transparency, how can you make the appropriate quality and price decision or allow for that? Otherwise, then patients are continuing to be kept as sheep with no voice, with no choice to their wallet and to management of their health. So we have to honor, and that broader definition is already in law. It just hasn't been enforced. And now we have the enforceable tools to go get it done. The technology exists, and I just think it's irresponsible of us if we don't follow the law of the health broader information definition to go get it done.
Okay, Cynthia, are you comfortable with the drafting as it is in front of you right now?
I couldn't hear you clearly.
Are you comfortable with the drafting as it's on screen right now?
I had to step out of a conference that I'm in to take the call, so I left my iPad there, so I can't see it. I'll have to get back to you when I get back to it.
That's right. Anil's got his hand raised. Anil?
Yeah, I'm just being really dense here. I just don't understand. If the information relates to an individual, then any transmission of that information would have to, by definition, it would have to be identifiable to that individual. So why do we need this additional?
That's quite true.
Well, so for example, if someone says, give me the price of my upcoming knee surgery, I would have to have some information in there about who I am. And therefore, by definition, it would have to be identifiable.
I think what Cynthia's argument is that there is a shift going on in the market around how patients wish to make choices about their future.
I'm sorry, you can't have that transparency without knowing some information about me. I don't think we're going to be doing any consumer service. We're not going to be doing any.
Let Anil finish.
We're not going to be doing consumers any justice if we simply make information that's health related available without some context. And that context has to be about that person. And by then, if you make that connection, it would have to have some information that's identifiable to that person. So I'm not disagreeing with the need for transparency. What I'm saying is that the way it's currently written should account for those use cases. What I think the unintended consequence by broadening the lens is that every bit of information that a hospital or a health plan or anyone else might have might be related to a health decision. Are you then basically saying that all that information needs to be made available? That would be really problematic, in my opinion.
Well, you know, it's really problematic when a patient gets $101,000 out-of-network surgical fee that they thought the surgeon was in network because the hospital was in network. They have to check the anesthesia. They have to look at everything, and they have to do it themselves, block and tackle. That's really problematic, and that is today. And then the bills come 7 months later.
But how's that not accounted for?
So let me get back to your point on the data on this issue. Is you can have the individually identifiable to what the payer and the contract negotiated rate and the out-of-pocket and the deductible status. All of that is absolutely appropriate. And what we're saying, you go for the broader definition, that patient should be able to shop. So if a health plan negotiated a really terrible rate for that patient, and they could go walk across the street and get it at another place that same health plan could see it through that broader pipe as it refers to that patient, or they could get it for cash at half the price of that, which we're seeing happen in the marketplace. Why shouldn't the patient say, well, heck, I could save money in my HSA. My employer could reward me for not paying $4,300, but for paying $200 for it. I'll pay that out of my deductible. I have a $6,000 deductible, and I'll get rewarded from my employer in time for saving money. Wouldn't that be a better model and allow the consumer to actually not only get access to their clinical information, but get access to their decisions and be able to choose to keep it in their HSA and their savings? And not
so,
be empowered. And unless we have the patient to make that decision and have that display, that's
opening the
pipe.
That,
all we're doing
yeah,
let policy happen.
But I don't know how that relates to this.
Because our job is to open the pipes for the future, to open APIs and technology and all of us to compete, just like the financial services industry did. We have to open the pipes. That's our job on this committee. And if we look at the three levels within the HIPAA definition and within the health information and the accountability under information blocking, then we can have those pipes be opened. And believe me, it will take time. I understand that. But our job is to open the pipes.
Cheryl, Turney.
So I, you know, of course I've shared my feelings on this before, but I do want to clarify, and I think, Andy, it merits clarifying, the charge of this committee isn't to broaden the pipes, it's to provide input on the things we've been charged to do. And I do think it's fair to say, Cynthia, that you have your perspective, which is completely, you know, appropriate. But there is room for other points of view as well. And I think that there's a caution that we're trying to communicate that perhaps is not resonating, and that is that when you broaden the language in the way that you, we believe that what you're looking for is already in the language that we have, and by broadening it the way that you are, you're actually going to make this rule unimplementable, because where is the boundary then? And then all data that everyone uses to process health decisions isn't available electronically in the manner in which you've communicated, nor is it available even internally in most organizations in the way in which you're anticipating. And so having a rule to make that available in a time frame that's very compressed already for what we're trying to do essentially could make the rule not implementable. And I don't think any of us want to see that happen. Sometimes we have to move through phases or levels of maturity, and I think we need to consider this, especially for, as I've indicated before, present and future, which is a different animal than claims data availability, needs to have some level of maturity applied to it. There aren't APIs today to support it. There are no implementation guides in terms of standards on how it should be done. And those are things that all need to be developed, which are going to take time. Most of the payers provide price transparency or cost transparency tools that actually tell you who are all the network providers for labs, where you can go and how much it's going to be and what it would cost out of pocket. You've presented some examples, and as we said, all stakeholders are not the same. So perhaps we should approach this from a stakeholder perspective, those people who have coverage versus those people that don't, those people that have high deductible plans versus those people that don't. But at the end of the day, there is some responsibility that a member or patient will have to take in order to even look up in their tool or look up in the data what lab is the one that they can go to for $20. That requires some responsibility on the behalf of the patient. So, yes, we don't want to make it difficult, but at the end of the day, what is the tool and what is the answer may not be the same for all stakeholder groups. So I that's my two cents on this topic.
Thank you, Cheryl. I'll take that as being a whole dollar's worth of two sentences. That was excellent. Thank you very much for the input. Denise, Sasha, Stephen, you've been uncharacteristic. Be quiet.
I guess I'm still trying to digest exactly what proposals we're considering here.
The addition of the language you see that might be refined, but in point three that Mark's just highlighted. Just so you know, above this, just with some slight tweaking, nothing material, doesn't change any of it. It's just purely to carve out individual electronic health information versus this more generic.
My take is that I think it would be more effective to create outside of this a separate definition of the pricing information of interest and the policies that would govern the availability of that pricing information. Because I know from some of the other task forces where we talked about the conditions of certification, for example, electronic health information is used in so many different places where it wouldn't make sense to include, for example, in a patient's particular download, mm-hmm. all of this external information that is more of interest for a different use case. So I would favor working on the pricing transparency information separate from the definition of electronic health information.
Okay, I think where EHI is used, and you know, this is one of my enduring concerns, that actually this meaning has been had other regulations written around it with the tighter individual meaning. My understanding is that where it is used elsewhere, it's referred to, but it doesn't necessarily mean everything. You know, so it wouldn't if it's not relevant to included. You know, the let's just call it a ministry from financial information that Cynthia was proposing, that that wouldn't be included, for example, in the export function. But Mark,
okay,
we can leave that link to help us on that.
Yeah. So just to clarify, the definition you're looking at here for EHI is specific to 171, which is information blocking. So you need to look at it in that context, really.
Okay.
And I can't, you know, I can't speak to every time we use EHI, but what I can say is the definition is in 171 for information blocking.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
So if the other criterion says export all electronic health information, it's not referencing the same definition?
Well, so I think we spoke about this before.
Refresh our memories.
I don't remember exactly how the conversation went, and I know Lauren Wu is on the call as well, and she might want to weigh in. But, you know, the EHI export is a different context. That's in the conditions of certification, so it applies only to developers of certified health IT or developers with certified products under the program. So, you know, the EHI export is being considered in a different task force. So it's different context, I guess, is all I'm saying. I don't know that we want to get into the specifics of that right now, because it might take a little while. But I believe it was discussed in both task forces.
Yeah, I guess this is Lauren. The only thing I'd add is that obviously we specifically proposed electronic health information export to align with the electronic health information definition across information blocking, as well as that specific criterion, as well as the TEFCA as well, for consistency. And so whatever definition you all are proposing, or any additions or subtractions to it that you're proposing, would align across all of those different use cases. So I think it does apply when you think about that use case as well. Was there a specific question about that criterion proposal?
I think that answers my question. Thank you. I just wanted to make sure that I understood the ramifications of making changes to this definition, and I do think some of them will flow through to other cases.
Yeah, that's right, Sasha.
So certainly within information blocking, EHI is used. So we would need to go and make sure that's set through. If Mark scrolls up slightly, to try and help us potentially include this and to preserve some of the downstream meanings, I've kind of just said, okay, the individual stuff is electronic individual health information, which is part of electronic health information, so we don't fall into that redefinition issue. And that might be helpful. Certainly we could go through and say, okay, where do we mean electronic individual health information, or do we mean this broader electronic health information, or do we mean electronic protected health information? So I think that could help not have unintended consequences. But the fact it comes back to this core, Mark, if you scroll down again, please. Do we want to have this broader definition, which is purely focused? We could strip out the word administrative and just have financial. That's what we need to consider. Denise.
Yes, thank you. So first
and how
of all,
on earth did you raise your hand? You're driving. Do not raise your hand. Just shout at us.
Actually, I have my daughter driving, so I could participate.
Okay.
I appreciate Cynthia's perspective, and I understand where she wants to go, but I do concur with what Cheryl contributed. And I just, you know, want to say that because I'm the co-chair of the other task force where we're discussing EHI export, I'm very concerned about how we define this, because we either have to do it within parameters that are going to support the EHI export criterion, or we have to constrain the EHI export criterion to specifically certified technology, because presently it intends to apply to all technology of a certified health IT developer, that contains EHI that is being used by the data provider or the, you know, the health system. So, you know, I really think if we're too broad here, I agree with Cheryl, we're not going to be able to implement this. It's going to be a mess.
Okay. Thank you, Denise. Now, for those of you who are online and looking, I've just included, Cynthia circulated a document to us all. She gave me the privilege of getting sight of it yesterday as well. I've just put in an alternative drafting of 3, which is actually completely clear copy of what's in currently in 2i, but just with all the contextualization around the individual being identifiable, which is a very broad definition of information.
And I apologize, my document refreshed, I think, when Andy added that, so I'm trying to get back down there.
Mark, we need to get you a new laptop.
I know, you should, yeah, talk to the people above me.
I shall make this a recommendation of the task force. Mark Lee gets a new laptop. I think that's outside our charter.
Yeah, well, now it's doing it again. So maybe you could read out what you put in there, Andy, because it's doing weird stuff.
So an alternative definition could be any other information that is transmitted by or maintained in electronic media as defined in 45 CFR 16103, that relates to the past, present, or future health or condition of an individual, the provision of healthcare to an individual, or the past, present, or future payment of the provision of healthcare to an individual. And those of you that are looking online right now can see it, and Mark was just refreshing.
So, Andy, we're comparing old 3 and new 3 now?
Yeah. Well, I've just included it because that's the drafting that Cynthia provided in her document that she circulated for those who haven't had the opportunity to read it yet. And Mark's popping it on screen.
Yeah, so I finally got it up there. So here's what we're looking at for all these two.
I apologize. I just have to step back in the conference because they're going to be referring to me for the next 2 minutes, 5 minutes. Sorry.
So which one's the new and which one's the old?
Well, so they're both new, I think, right, Andy?
Oh, they're both new.
Both are new in square brackets. These are, the first one is a drafting which I did based upon Cynthia's document, to try and have a light touch in here. The second one is taken directly from Cynthia's document, and it is fundamentally the same as the core individual definition that we had, but without the identifiable components of it.
And let me, while people are thinking this over, I just want to kind of reiterate from ONC's perspective, it seems like we might be you know, there might just be two different, you know, ways of thinking about this in the group. And as far as moving on, it would be okay to have, you know, a majority and minority opinion or however you want to word it, I think, just to make sure that everyone's voice is heard.
And that's where we're coming from. Stephen Lane has his hand raised.
Yeah, thanks. I think it would be best to try to collapse these into one for clarity's sake so that we could deal with it all together. Also, Cheryl, could you restate what you said was your core objection to this? Because I really do have a sympathy to what Cynthia is trying to accomplish. I'm trying to understand what the objection is.
So the objection is that when we open it up to data that's not linked to an individual, then where does the, you know, where does the information stop? You know, we're not just talking about price information here. She has stated before she's looking for all information that can be used, including risk scores and things of that nature, which, again, I don't have a problem with any of those things in the right context and how they need to be applied to a particular individual. And I just think that the example that was that she used before was basically she wanted, you know, anybody be able to as a member, go in and see, you know, this is the rate that a hospital A has negotiated for Aetna, Cigna, United, whatever. But that's not meaningful to a person who's already within a plan that they've signed up for. So making the data manageable to them is what I'm saying. And it does appear that by broadening it, she's looking for a different set of information to be released. And again, with appropriate guardrails, I wouldn't have a problem with that either. But right now, we're just trying to resolve information blocking for the basis of the individual. And I think we have to start somewhere, and that's my objection. And I do think it has unintended consequences by opening that up into other things we haven't even discussed in this group.
Thanks.
Thanks for that.
Thanks,
Valerie.
Hi. Thanks, Andy. I guess I just wanted to go on the record to say that, you know, I also believe that we've got to get to a point where we've got better price transparency. But I share Cheryl's, John's, and Neil's concerns with this. I think that the reason CMS put out an RFI for pricing is because, you know, to Cheryl's point, it isn't that simple. And it really does depend on each individual's circumstance and whether they're insured or they're not insured. Even the negotiated price, if you have no insurance, you know, there's different provisions for discounts, and then there's the out-of-pocket. And I just think that and, you know, even if you got to, like, starting to try and move around charge masters, like, how do you actually convey price when a provider is getting paid on a value-based care arrangement or a capitation arrangement? It's just not this simple, and I think we've got to be very deliberate in order to really get to meaningful price transparency in the future. And I just don't think there's enough clarity here to get there. And I don't disagree. And I thought our recommendation had been we would create a task force designed to just, tackle these very serious issues. But throwing a definition in sort of toward the tail end of something, I'm very uncomfortable.
Thank you, Valerie. That is helpful input. I can actually see where we may have not a divergent opinion, but agreement on points one and two. And just note, I've done 2I and 2II to try and make things easier for, you know, a minority opinion on point three. And then we'll ask ONC to consider the two options there. Anybody else? No one else has got their hand raised. John Kansky, you've been silent.
Andy, can you repeat the last sentence?
I beg your pardon. I was calling on John Kansky. John doesn't seem to want to come forth. Okay. I'm going to suggest we open up to public comment at this point. Yes.
You prompted me on mute about 80 feet from my phone.
You have a remarkably large study then, sir.
So my team is wondering why I'm running across my office. So really, I'm just echoing Anil, Cheryl, and Valerie, and I put my comment in the chat box.
Yes. Okay. Can we open to public comment then, please?
Operator, can we please open the public line?
If you'd like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to move your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
And this, in particular, will be an area where public comment will be highly welcomed, I think, by this broader, by the entire task force to help us with our deliberations here.
And operator, any comments in the queue?
Not at this time.
Okay. Andy, if it's okay with you, we'll leave the comment line open for the last 10 minutes and see if we get any takers.
Okay. That's cool. Thank you. Okay, guys, if we can just go back to the document on screen. What I've suggested is that we actually... we have a divergent opinion, okay? I think we have some very deeply held and articulately expressed opinions discussing to and from on this particular clause to be recommended. I propose to the group that we include it as a stated divergent opinion for consideration by ONC, and that it is a minority recommendation coming out of the group. Would the group as a whole be comfortable for us taking that opinion and expressing it like that? And, Cheryl, raise your hand, please.
Would, and further, I would say that we should definitely make a recommendation, as we, many of us have recommended, that we establish a task force and focus on this as one of our top priorities. Because we definitely need this forward, but I just think it's more complex than Uber, and it's not the same as ordering from a restaurant menu. And, you know, I'm more than happy to do whatever needs to be done to help, you know, this move forward, as I've volunteered in the past.
So I believe Lauren would be delighted that you are proposing yourself to join that task force, should it be enacted. In the RFI around price transparency, we have already got the recommendation drafted there for a task force to be instantiated to run in parallel, so that we don't inadvertently slow down this regulation draft by trying to couple it tightly together. So I think that addresses that view. Does it not, Cheryl?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, great. So I'm going to go back to what we've got on the table right now. Mark, can you share the screen?
Yeah. Yep, doing it right
Andy?
Now.
Andy?
Yes.
Yeah. Amanda makes the comment that, you know, we have on this task force at the table primarily today's software providers, insurance plans providers, and representation of systems integrators as well. So we do not have at the table for looking at the future technology innovators. And I would just like to bring that to the attention of the committee to say, look, I think there's a missing voice at the table of how, if we have, you know, if we look at information blocking as a whole, the goal is to get the information out so that the patient can have best access to the best quality of care at the lowest possible price. And if they're blocked and into a narrow rabbit hole of just what is individually identifiable to them, then they can't see everything around them. And I just want to go on record to say, unless we open the big pipes and we allow technological innovation and small businesses and creative minds to come in and do things differently, not status quo, then we are continuing to have protectionism built in. And so I do believe that we're also not consistent with the HIPAA law, with the broader, the three levels of definition. So I just throw that there, and I will stop and agree that the majority can decide, and I'll move on. I just want to go on record.
Okay, thank you very much. You are on record. This is public call, and this is a matter of record. John Kansky, had your hand raised first.
I was just reacting to Cynthia's comment. I think there's plenty of organizations represented that view themselves as technology innovators, including my own. So I think we bring that perspective.
Thank you, John. Cheryl?
I'm sorry, that was from before.
Okay, no worries.
Sorry.
So, Anil?
Yeah, I just want to add that I think we see ourselves as technology innovators, and we have lots of innovative groups within the broader IBM that innovate, and we help a lot of small companies innovate in this space. I think my position, and I think we should be thinking about what is being prevented with the current way it's written versus how are we interpreting it, I think remains to be seen. I think no one is arguing against price transparency. No one is arguing against innovation. The question I think before us is the current language sufficient to do this in a way that makes sense, or are we going to have unintended consequences if we were to broaden the language? And I think that's where we're coming from. That could actually be a harm to innovators if it's not clear, and they end up going down a path that becomes a challenging process down the road. So I would just, respectful to Cynthia's position, and having been the small innovator and having now be part of a larger group that's helping others innovate, I want to make sure that we don't lose sight of the fact that sometimes broad language can actually make it harder for innovation if we're not clear.
Thank you, Anil. I'm going to maintain the decorum of a chair and not comment any further on this. What I am going to say is on screen right now, you have the drafting as Cynthia was provided. I've noted in front of it that it is additional text for consideration as a divergent opinion. Is the task force happy for this to be our drafted recommendation as it stands? And I'm just going to say, all members of the task force in agreement, please say aye.
Andy, it's Val. I'm still a little confused. So you're asking us to
vote
right
on the current drafting you have in front of you. We've got the original definition we had prior to today.
And then
we are stating that there is some additional text for consideration, but it is a divergent opinion. So it's not got the full endorsement of the entire group.
Okay. I thought you had said before you were going to indicate it was a minority.
I did. You were right. Hang on a second. I was frequently clicking in the wrong place. Divergent minority opinion. Yep. There we go. Done. Okay. Anil Jain has got his hand raised.
Yeah, real quick. We're one committee, one task force. I think we should have one consensus-driven point of view. There are plenty of other ways to get a minority opinion voiced. Now, I will go with whatever the group decides, but having a divergent minority opinion be folded in this way, I'm just not. Is that something that we've been doing as part of our committee work?
We have not had any other divergent opinion where we have not been able to come to an absolute majority agreement on what we're proposing or what we're recommending.
Okay.
Sorry.
What I was going to say was what I would recommend is that we have the consensus of the language, but then put Cynthia's concerns as part of our discussion and say we want to ensure that this particular viewpoint is reflected in the way that the current regs are written. Because
okay.
I think point of view
okay,
is
Anil.
Right. I think the way that we're constructing it may be off. Okay, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Anil, I'm going to call a close to the conversation at this point. I do want to go to the vote, and as your chair, happy to go with the group decision here. If we do not want to draft it this way, I want to approach it in a different direction, then you need to vote nay, okay? So I'm going to go back to the vote. All in favour of leaving it as currently drafted on screen, noting that this is additional text for consideration as a divergent minority opinion, please say aye. Sighing doesn't count, whoever that was. It sounds
sorry.
Like it's going to be a nay. Okay.
That was Stephen sighing. I thought sighing was a good vote.
No, not yet. So that's no agreements. Okay. Abstentions.
I'll abstain, Stephen Lane.
Thanks, Stephen. And all against, please say nay.
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 Marvelous. So we don't want any of this. Guys, someone have a proposal. Do you want to propose what Anil had that we part this into discussion?
Yeah, I agree with that, Andy.
Okay. So second vote, that we take this word as additional text for consideration and put that into our discussion section. Those in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Okay. Those against, please say nay. Those abstaining, please say abstain. Okay, sounds like we have an absolute majority that we're going to put it into the discussion text, and I have already done so, it sits above. Look at that, majority opinion. We are, okay. Guys, thank you ever so much. We've got to the bottom of the hour. Have we got any public comments? Operator?
Not at this time.
Okay. Team, thank you very much for your time today. Have a great weekend, and I look forward to speaking to you all next week.
Thank you, Andy.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.